Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, let's get to this Texans culture in a couple of minutes. First, though, let's go out to our HRMP listener line, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Steven, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Good, man. How are you doing?
Great. Hey, so you guys were talking about Carson Wentz, and obviously we have our own quarterback thing going on in Houston. Is there any chance that Cam Newton gets the call for the AFC South?
I don't think he's ever playing again in the NFL.
Steven, and look, Jeremy's had that opinion all along. I think if that call was going to be made, it already would have had taken place. I think if Chris Ballard with Indianapolis had not only true concerns about Carson Wentz, and obviously it started with his foot, and now there's double ankle sprains, and the level of feline that he might have within his system. There are issues with his toughness, if you want to just put it that way. I think if Ballard was going to address it, it would have been before the regular season started, because at least at that point he didn't have the two sprained ankles, and it was just a matter of getting someone up to speed while you knew Wentz was still going to be your starter. Now it's almost too late, because now trying to get any quarterback in there, learn the system, learn the terminology, and get him up to speed, ready to play. You think Davis Mills has an uphill battle, starting with what he was dealing with second half of last week into a quick start, quick turnaround this week. It would be a near impossible situation for any quarterback coming in right now for Cam. Texans, same thing. If Texans felt like, hey, you know what? He's coming out of the Patriots. We're Patriots South. We think we've got another guy that could actually help us get where we need to go. And if something happens to Taylor, we could use him. I think it would already have happened, and it would have happened immediately after he was let go by the Patriots, because it was so shocking to everybody in the league. But Jacksonville doesn't need him, and they're going to take their lumps with Trevor Lawrence. So when you're talking about the other two teams right there, I think that if it was going to happen, it already would have, and now because it hasn't to this point, it won't.
Yeah, if you go through the teams, and like even if you go outside of the AFC South, like the Texans aren't going to make that move. They're not going to be interested in Cam Newton, because really not quite honestly, they're not that interested in winning football games. Nick Caserio told you to embrace the suck whenever he said we're looking more at the process than the results.
We told them that.
And I don't blame that mentality either. Like, you have to press the hard reset. You have to rebuild the organization. And I think it's the proper way of getting the organization back on the right track. Jacksonville is not going to make that move. The Colts, again, very slim, but unless they find out Carson Wentz's ankle injuries are more severe and he's going to be out a while, and they need to win a couple of games, too, to kind of be in that conversation of even wanting to go out and pick up a quarterback. I think Tennessee might be the most likely. Like, if Ryan Tannehill gets hurt, you have Logan Woodside as your backup quarterback. Like, that all of a sudden makes a little bit of sense. The football team you thought would be an option, too, but they're going with Heinicke. And Cam Newton, let's not forget this part of it, Cam Newton himself says he would not be a good backup in the NFL.
Right, but here's the thing. At a certain point, you either want to play or you don't. So if you're dialed in, what you want and what you get are two different things sometimes, but you still get what you want by being a part of a team in the league playing NFL football if you're willing to change your stance. But the fact is, you bring up a great option in Tennessee. But especially when I said all along, the Nick Foles theories tells you, if you're a championship caliber football team or you have championship aspirations, you got to have two quarterbacks just like you got to have two running backs. If you would have done that at Tennessee, again, you'd have done it before the regular season started, because you know Tannehill's going to be your guy unless he gets hurt, and then you can get Cam up to speed, yeah, and he can take his time and take his reps and learn everything that he needs to learn. The fact that they haven't done it yet, they're rolling the dice, but it's too late to do it now, I think.
Yeah, if you're signing a quarterback at this point, usually it's going to be somebody to back somebody up or be on your practice squad. Like, it's insurance at this point. I don't think Cam Newton, his ego's too big for him to be insurance. He wants to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. As far as the Texans go, they were never going to sign a quarterback this week. Like, if the Texans do make a move at quarterback, it's going to come after the Thursday night football game, but it's still not going to be a splash, right? Like, maybe they sign a veteran backup. Maybe they sign a younger quarterback who they like his potential, and they can put him on the practice squad because now Jeff Driscoll is going to be called up to the active roster today. I think we will see a Texans quarterback move with Tyrod Taylor going to the IR this week. It's just going to come next week, and it's not going to be splashy at all.
Right, and like we were talking about, the biggest thing with any quarterback acquisition is how much time to have any to get anybody up to speed. And even in a regular week, if you bring a guy in, it's so hard because the reps have to be split, and you need so many reps for your starting quarterback to be going up against the defenses that are going to be played and to run all the different scenarios that they have to go over getting ready for a game that week. When you play a game tonight against Carolina and you have those extra couple of days built in as we mentioned earlier this week in the show, that's the ideal time to capitalize on those extra days if you are truly going to bring someone else into the fold and expect them to pick up the system. Now you've got those extra days, and they are massive in terms of the value they bring to the table. That's the only time it makes sense between now and probably the rest of the season for the Texans.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. I wanted to look at this Texans culture because it's all you hear about. Sarah Barshop wrote an article over at ESPN2 about the culture and how David Culley's doing a really good job. He speaks of the culture. There's a right way to do things. We don't have what we call rules. We have a culture. Respect everybody around here. Do things the right way, and we're consistent with that. And if guys that aren't going to do that, obviously they understand that that's not going to be a part of what we do. Maybe Bradley Roby. Maybe Zach Cunningham, right? First quarter of this last game that they played was didn't play in the entire first quarter. Troubles of being on time, I find out from this article. I believe in culture, especially for an organization, sports teams, all of that. I believe that you need to kind of install what the culture is going to be. You need to lay the foundation and the groundwork of what you're going to be in every regime. And like, this is the Nick Caserio regime for the Houston Texans. So I believe in that. I believe that it's a good thing for the Texans to do. I think it's a great thing in year one to kind of lay the foundation for it, because you're not going to really win and you don't need to bring in players that might go against what you describe as culture. Question I have, though, and like, if you look at the 2021 motto of this team, everything says team, team, team. Like, team before everything else, which is great. That's great to hear, all of that. How sustainable is that, though, and how does that equate to winning?
Well, winning allows you to do more of it, because the buy-in and the believability in the locker room comes with the fact that it's getting results. On a weekly basis, the players in the locker room can see it translating to positive experiences on the field. And that's going to take time, because what they're trying to overcome and get over is that Grand Canyon left behind by a guy that didn't know about preaching team. It preached me, 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 and Bill O'Brien. It preached so hard that me as the head coach wasn't enough. Me had to be the general manager. And then me had to be the one that went out and told you that if you have baby mamas around, no matter if you're the best player at your position in the league or not, and you don't practice hard enough, even though you perform every Sunday when you're called upon, you got to go. And the fact that if you don't go with what I believe in and the way I do it, even if me brought you in, me's going to kick you out too. See Brian Gain, a guy that's a very respected football guy that was brought in to be the general manager after the guy you wanted to get out was let go. And the fact that he didn't agree with you and you guys had two different sides of an issue in Jadeveon Clowney and other issues, it meant that if you don't agree with me, then you're not going to see tomorrow in my organization. You're going to go too. So overcoming the hurdle that Bill O'Brien left behind is as much to do with changing the culture as anything of getting the players buy-in and creating that team environment going forward.
I think all that stuff sounds great. But you're sitting with the number two pick of the 2022 NFL draft. Mm-hmm. How much is the culture part coming into your decision whenever you're trying to evaluate prospects?
Well, I think that that's a kind of a loaded question, because I think that we know that if you were playing under Bob McNair's Houston Texans, if you had any kind of a record and it had nothing to do with stats on a football field, you wouldn't be a member of the Houston Texans no matter how good you are. I think that the new personnel with Nick Caserio in the front office are at least smart enough to believe you might have a checkered past, but if you can play and help this football team and the way you treat your teammates is totally different than whatever you treated other people to do what you did previously, we will consider you. And I think that's what you have to do in the NFL, because if you don't, you're actually putting yourself behind the eight ball voluntarily, which no team wants to do. The fact that you passed on guys because of their one-time mistakes in life and ignored how good of a football player they were as opposed to anybody else you could have taken at certain points in a draft is on you.
Yeah.
Because you got to believe your culture can help to continue to change the person off the field that you're bringing in, as opposed to, you're on your own, bro. We need you to play, but we need you to be a good Samaritan, a great dude, and a community guy. And whether, you know, that's on you if you can do it or not. But if you don't, you don't belong here.
Like, you can get away with it in free agency, I think, because you're not going to really be a player in big free agents for the next 3 to 4 seasons. Like, the big decisions you're going to make if you're Nick Caserio coming up, one's going to be the Deshaun Watson trade once you're actually allowed to make that trade. And I know there's nothing preventing a potential trade right now. But in our opinion, nothing's going to happen until the civil cases, and maybe to even finding out if the grand jury is going to indict him for anything criminally. Nick Caserio is not trading him before that, even though some people think that that might happen. We don't believe that. that's going to be your biggest move that you make for Caserio. And you're not really worried about culture there. Maybe you're losing a guy that you don't believe can fit the culture, but you're getting back draft picks. You know, no players are coming back. You're not going to be signing any sort of free agents. So, like, the biggest personnel move you're going to make is going to be what you do with the draft in 2022. And I'm wondering, you know, how much that culture comes into play. Like, if you have a really good player there at number two, but he's not a culture fit, and maybe you draft the guy who's the fourth or fifth best player in the draft who is a culture fit, I think that's where you start to have problems as an organization.
There's been a couple of glaring instances in the past. One of them, I think, was Clinton Portis in the second round a few years ago. I'm trying to remember. There were a couple guys where the football aspect...
Well, how about Joe Mixon? I think that's a good one.
Well, yeah, the football aspect said, there's a guy that's going to help your football team. And the McNair family said, yeah, no, there's nothing there that we can overlook because of the fact that he did this or that when he was this age or that age. And those have bit them in the past. I think that, I don't know if Easterby helps or hurts that situation, but if Nick Caserio really truly says this is his team, done his way, he's got to be smarter about that.
Yeah. I mean, Joe Mixon, he ended up falling all the way to the second round. Somebody that had, it was a misdemeanor assault charge. I thought maybe it was just alleged, but it was an assault charge that he had whenever he, I think it was even on video, right? Where he punched the lady at the bar.
Yep.
He punched the lady at the bar, slid all the way to the second round. Now you're looking at a running back who's one of the top five running backs in the league, but you do have to deal with the black cloud that is over the head of Joe Mixon that he did have this in his past. So I wonder if this new regime for the Texans in this culture is something that would ever overlook something like that. All right, coming up next, evidence that the Astros do not want the top seed in the American League. That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
And it's 2-0 on Alvarez, who crushes one.
Oh, my goodness.
Deep to center field. Give him a hundo. 100 RBI season for the first time in his career with a two-run bolt to center field.
Dusty Baker later took him out of a game, out of a tie game. 5-5 in the eighth. Took him out of the tie game. He left with soreness after he went into left field, and then Dusty brought him back.
When you don't define the soreness.
You know the last time I saw that, by the way? Last time you let a player take the field and then bring him back? It's like when they hit a milestone and you want the ovation.
Yeah, right.
Dusty wanted Yordan to get the ovation there in Anaheim after hitting one 450 feet onto the center field berms.
He's leaving with soreness because his ass is killing him because he can't understand why his manager just took him out of the game.
Well, he played, what, 4 games in a row in the outfield?
Who cares?
That's a big thing for Yordan.
Okay, then start him at DH to start the game if you're worried about it coming in. But going out of it with the amount, with the bomb he hit, with the fact that he was that big a part of your offense last night, once you're in it, don't take him out of it because he's one of the keys why you're still in a game that you did everything to lose thanks to Maton.
You know that I like to read way too much into things, right?
Absolutely.
I read way too much into things. I see Dusty Baker yesterday take out Yordan Alvarez in that game, and he's been giving guys days off in Anaheim, which he should. I mean, everybody should get rested up for the playoffs. That's the primary. That's the focus. I don't think Dusty Baker and the Astros want any part of the one seed. I think they like where they're at. I think they love the two seed. I think that they like their matchup against Chicago. I don't think they want to match up against either Boston, New York, or a red-hot Toronto team. I think that they really like where they're at against Chicago. They like the way that that matches up. They've had success with them this season. And their philosophy right now is, in these final 10 games, hey, we're going to get guys right for the playoffs. And we're going to get guys some rest. We're going to take guys out in the eighth inning in a tie game whenever their spot in the order might come up in a big spot. They're one of our better hitters.
No, see,
I think Dusty Baker and the Astros want the White Sox in the first round.
I said you need to be in a position of strength to be able to dictate who you want to play. They're there to some degree, right? Because they control their destiny. But I think that because they're so close now, I don't think that I'm willing to buy into that. Because if I'm willing to buy into that, then I'm going to see a lot more of your big-name guys sitting down from the start of games to the finish of games. You're not bringing them in late. Maldonado would have never been a late-season replacement, late game last night replacement at catcher because you need all that rest because he's the guy that's played all those games in a row. You'd have been treating this a whole lot differently. I want them to be in a position of strength, but now you're so close to really dictating it and not even having to worry about what you do against Tampa in that three-game series. if you just keep playing your cards right. Plus, you're the hot team. Something is big in momentum in baseball. When you look at what the Cardinals are doing right now, how they've completely just rewritten the wild card race and ran away with it,
yep,
because they've won 11 in a row. Because of the fact that when you look at the good teams that get really good at the right time and don't give a game away here and there so that they can't look at it and go, and we won like something like 7 out of 9 or 7 out of 10. Instead, you could say, no, dude, we've won 7 straight games, and we are dominating, and teams are starting to notate it, too, that we're playing, going, look out for them. That means something, too. That's why I'm not buying into all that.
Yeah, I just look at the Dusty Baker lineups day in, day out. They're experimenting with guys in different positions. Like, one day you have Siri playing center and you have Jake Myers playing left, and then the next day you have Myers playing center and Siri playing left. Like, you can see that he's tinkering, that he's toying, that he wants to see certain players at certain spots defensively, certain spots of the order. Like, he had Myers in the 9-hole yesterday. Like, he's pulling out Yordan Alvarez in a tie game in the 8th inning when it's 5-5. Like, that is making sure that he's load managed, that he's not overworking it.
No,
that's being super careful
enough
on Yordan Alvarez. Like, if that game was of significance yesterday, if that's a game where you're, like, trying to chase a team in the AL West as opposed to being the, you know, team that's way up in the American League West, or if that's a playoff game, Yordan Alvarez doesn't come out of that game.
See, I disagree because of the fact that he already
did. You think Yordan Alvarez gets pulled in that game as if it's a playoff game?
No, I agree with the fact that he would get pulled, but I still don't think that's the reason why he pulled him last night, because he's already done too much damage. He already had to put the burners on to score from second on a base hit.
It came out right after that.
So, yeah, he's already done too much. And if you're going to do that, then you go down and talk to him in the middle of the inning and throughout the inning. You don't let him run out to left field. You don't basically check on him because the cameras were all over him, yucking it up with the guys on the bench, talking about what he did, how he hit the ball, how far it went, you know, scoring and all these other things. He wasn't limping. He didn't look. And then we just label it soreness. You're not telling us what we've known. The lingering injuries are his knees and his lower body. You're just kind of masking it.
Well, I think
because
he was
in retrospect, as you look back on it, it was a dumb move.
It was a dumb move, but I think it's experimenting. It's him like messing
Stop
around spring training
it's not
type
spring
of stuff.
Training.
But I think they want the two seed. And speaking to your momentum side of it too, like I agree with that. I think momentum is a big thing in baseball. The team that is hot heading into the postseason a lot of times have good success going into the postseason. That's another reason why the two seed's a good one. Because if you're the top seed, you're facing the winner of that wild card game, which means they won a playoff game to get into the ALDS. Yep. And it also means, like in the Blue Jays case, that they were playing really good baseball down the stretch because you have a three-team race with Toronto, with Boston, with the Yankees, Boston and New York, currently your wild card teams. They're going to have to play well to get into that wild card game. They're then going to have to beat one of those other teams to make it into the real playoff bracket.
But
so from like a momentum point of view, maybe facing the wild card team is not ideal either because they'll be hot.
I talked about this with Myers, but it goes to most baseball players that play Major League Baseball. You're as good as you can be when you're playing every day because you're in a rhythm, because you're in a timing mechanism at the plate. It's different than batting practice or in the batting cages, batting and hitting. It's hitting off a live pitching and finding your rhythm and getting, you know, the mechanics of your swing down and then keeping it there. We saw what happened with Myers when he's playing every day in the lineup, no matter where he's hitting above 300. He's hitting in big key spots. He looks like a different player when you sit, play one, sit two, play two, sit one. When he diddles around with when he plays and how long he plays, he's not the same kind of player. You can't afford to get a guy out of rhythm going into the playoffs. The value is get him hot at the right time. Ride the hot hand. If Yordan is ripping the cover off the ball, don't sit him down so that he kind of takes a step back. Keep him hot. Dr. Dre on 290, great point, which is what I brought up earlier. Then don't play him in left field, but play him at designated hitter so he doesn't lose what's most important to this team, which is his eye at the plate and what he brings from a hitting perspective. He doesn't have to play the field. I get it, Brantley's out.
Yeah, but he wants Tucker there because Tucker's been hurt with the shoulder.
But we've seen you've got four capable outfielders with Brantley out that's not named Yordan that can do exactly what you need to do because Siri has stepped up offensively. You didn't see that coming. He's got great wheels, and he's a very good outfielder. You got McCormick, who played his ass off in the outfield last night and hits the ball timely. You've got Myers that's doing everything, and you got Tucker. So don't give me that excuse with Brantley out, we had to do what we had to do, because that's a bunch of BS too.
I just don't think there's any doubt that the primary focus of Dusty Baker right now in these final 10 games is to get them finally tuned for the playoffs, and taking that's the primary concern, even if it means you give up a chance at the one seed. The one seed secondary, in my opinion, for Dusty Baker. Personally, I wanted the White Sox. Another reason why I want the White Sox in the ALDS really has nothing to do with the Astros and the White Sox. But did you catch this last night in the Rays-Blue Jays game? You had all all of the issues with Kevin Kiermaier sliding into the plate. He knocked off the little, you know, wristband that the catcher had. He picked it up, took it into his pocket. The Blue Jays weren't happy about it, so they sent a clubby over to get it. Like, if you're that mad to get the little play card, yes, bad boy, whatever, bad boy clubby, if you're that mad about it, walk into their dugout and get it. And then you had all the news that came out yesterday where they were like, oh, yeah, everything's fine. It's water under the bridge. No problem whatsoever. Well, then last night, the Jays were down big late. They did this.
And now Baruchy hits Kiermaier on the first pitch, and it's just natural to wonder if this has anything to do with yesterday and the card that he picked up at the plate. You knew nothing was going to happen in a meaningful moment. But with the Jays down six in the eighth inning, Kiermaier is sure wondering if that was intentional. Kevin Cash sure thinks that was intentional.
Yeah, he wants him thrown out of the game, and that was obviously what was going on as Baruchy hit Kiermaier. And nobody knows if he was ordered to or he did it on his own, but Kevin Cash understands what it was all about. The game is out of hand. It's 7-1, and Kiermaier takes one in the middle of the back. That's not a good look on the Blue Jays for me.
So that was the Blue Jays broadcast.
Oh, that was Dan
Shulman,
who's
Buck
outstanding.
Martinez.
Buck Martinez, who used to do national TV and hid the accent, has really taken on the whole Canada aspect of that in doing games now. He sounds totally different. But look, I get it. It's the Blue Jays broadcast. Here's the thing. Both managers are friends. They talked about it after the game. They said that they discussed it. They said that Cash basically apologized. They said that they had it worked out. So you either have to ask the question if that's all BS and the Jays have a little bit of the red ass because they were getting it handed to them again and decided to change their mind, or if the players took matters into their own hands and said, don't care if the managers are friends. What we had happen to us is BS, and we're going to tell our pitcher to go get him.
I thought the whole way that Toronto handled it was Bush League. Like, if you're that mad about a card being in the other dugout, go get that card. If it leads to an ejection or a fine, well, okay, you must be really mad about it. Show it. The whole, like, oh, everything's fine, everything's great, we're all on good terms. Like, okay, well, you're lying about it. That's soft, too. Like, if you're that mad, own it. And then to be down six runs in the eighth inning and that's when you respond, that whole thing by Toronto was Bush League. I thought they handled it as poorly as you possibly can.
Well, I think that, one, you can say go get it. You're not going to get it. I think that the whole thing,
if there's an altercation there, you might be able to get it.
You're still not getting it. Wherever it is, it's been analyzed in the video room and by the analytics department and looked at, and the scout, it put into their scouting reports to what to prepare for. And it's part of gamesmanship, right? It wasn't acquired by using monitors and banging on trash cans and taking massage guns to task. It was, hey, you dropped it, we picked it up, it's information. It's just like if we picked up what your indicator was and knew what your signs were from your third base coach. It's part of baseball. So if you do go there and try and get it back, chances are you ain't getting it back anyway, so you can make the stink in the stance. Essentially what they did is they made their stink in the stance by hitting him in the back at a meaningless point in the game.
But that's what's Bush League about it. That's what's Bush League about it.
Well, you're not going to do it if it's a tight game.
Well, then don't do it at all. Like, the fact that's why Buck Martinez,
there's no rule as to when you do it.
But that's why, but I mean, I think it does matter a little bit, because now it shows that you're not really that angry about it. You're just doing it at a bad time that's convenient for you. That's why Buck Martinez on the Toronto TV broadcast said this is not a good look for Toronto. If you're that mad where you're going to drill a guy between the back, you don't do it when you're down six runs in the eighth inning. That's Bush League.
You did it in the back, which sends the obvious message of why you were doing it, because you didn't go headhunting, which you shouldn't do, and you didn't do it elsewhere. You hit them where they always tell you, between the butt and the middle of the numbers. That's what you did. Could you have done it at a different time? Yes. But there's no unwritten rule as to when you have to do it when you do it.
That's an unwritten rule where you don't do it down six in the eighth.
Nope. Because you know what? You don't want to do it if you're in a tight game and it costs you the game on top of the fact that you have the
Kevin Kiermaier in the postgame said he thought he was going to get it in the first at bat.
Okay, but he didn't. But guess what? It doesn't matter when, maybe because he expected it, they didn't do it then either. It doesn't matter. The thing is that we can hyperanalyze this all we want. It's just part of the stupidity of sometimes the unwritten rules of baseball. And then, the fact that when the Rays guys were, I think it was, trying to make a big deal out of it. Yeah, it is. You know what? It's so wrong, because if he dropped a $100 bill instead of dropping the scouting report, if you picked it up and walked away with
that
it, that's
too.
Stealing. That's
I saw
Shut
that
up.
Too. I mean, that was ridiculous. But yeah, back to the point of why I want the Astros to be the 2 seed. I want to see Tampa Bay, Toronto, and the other ALDS. Get mm-hmm. those teams together 5 times. That'd be great. Toronto with work to do, though. They're a half game behind the Yankees for that second wild card spot. Boston's too clear. on the Yankees for the top spot. All right, coming up next, was Aaron Rodgers close to being a Niner? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, right now, before we go to the break, I want to tell you again about MyBookie. Look, I'm telling you, if there's one place you want to go to put money down on football games, it's definitely MyBookie.ag. And one of the reasons why I said to do that is because along the way, they have promo picks where it doesn't cost you anything, but you can get involved and you could possibly cash in. If you cash in, you get real money in return in your account for being the for making the right picks. It's all part of being a part of MyBookie.ag. When you sign up now and you put in the promo code BET975, you're in. They're also going to double your first deposit, or if you're an existing customer and you put in that same promo code BET975, you are also going to get double your first deposit up to $1,000. More money in your account means more chances to win and more opportunities to play games. But on top of that, Saturday night, there's going to be blood, because if you go to MyBookie.ag and understand that that UFC First Blood promotion is going on, any fighter on the made card bleeds, you can win. The second you see blood, you get paid. With this bet centered around five main card bouts in the UFC this weekend, including two title fights, the Octagon's not going to stay dry for long. There's going to be blood, and it's an opportunity you could get paid. Nick Diaz has bled in three of his last four fights. They chart this stuff. Robbie Lawler, a leaky faucet, so to speak. You know, by the end of his five-round rematch, blood's going to be spilled. Just go to mybookie.ag, click on Odds Boost for the First Blood promotion, and get in on the action. And, of course, right now, when you use the promo code BET975, like I said, you can start out by doubling your first deposit as well. But you also have a chance to win in this First Blood promotion. Not only that, MyBookie's $50,000 NFL Survivor Pool is going on, so you can get involved in that as well, all for being a member at MyBookie.ag. MyBookie.ag, promo code is BET975, then go to Odds Boost, get in on the First Blood promotion, and start reaping all the benefits of being a customer at MyBookie.ag. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere. MyBookie.
ESPN. 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
All right, tomorrow we're going to be broadcasting live from Texas Barber College, noon until 3. Booker T, another member of the Killer Bees, he'll be joining us for a little bit as well. It's at 8201 South Gessner, home of the $5 haircut. So come hang out with us, get a cheap haircut. We'll be out there till 3. Promo staff will be out there away as well with a bunch of giveaways. Come on out. Hang out with us. Texas Barber College tomorrow, 8201 South Gessner. So did you ever believe that Aaron Rodgers could not be a Green Bay Packer this year?
I was clear from day one all the way through the process that he would be starting for the Green Bay Packers week one. He would not miss any games. He would not be traded. He would not go anywhere. And that's why I continue to bring up Mike Greenberg as the biggest honk and all the other honks that guaranteed he'd never play another game in the uniform and he wouldn't do this and he wouldn't do that. And just for the value of the listeners, I was honest with them. I told them exactly where the problems lied. That came out later. And I was spot on with that it was Mark Murphy and it was GM Brian Gutekunst. And I spelled it all out for you, but I never for a minute thought he'd play elsewhere. But you know what? It made for great clicks and a whole lot of content.
And we see that, too, with Deshaun Watson, where you get a new story recycled every other day or so, and mm-hmm. There's nothing really new about it. Well, the Packers and the 49ers, they play this week, and those two head coaches have a little bit of history with one another. Kyle Shanahan said this offseason, basically, that they called on Aaron Rodgers, because why wouldn't you? Well, it's getting kicked around today, or this week as well, with that matchup going on this weekend. Kyle Shanahan recalls that moment when they called about Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I thought it'd be a quick no. Which it was exactly what I thought it would be. But you hear enough stuff, and I think everyone knew what was going on at that time that it didn't seem like it was worth the call, but I know how we would have felt if it was going to happen and that we didn't call. So you call and you get a quick answer, which is what you were expecting, and then you move on.
That's just good good kick in the tires, right? Cover over every stone. I mean, they drafted Lance. Like, you can't feel any worse.
This was before they drafted Lance, too. This was essentially, like, before they even thought about moving on to another young quarterback that's inexperienced for a Super Bowl-caliber team. They were already sending messages whether Jimmy got him or not. You think they told Jimmy ahead of time they were going to call Green Bay about Aaron Rodgers?
No, he said that they actually asked him about it. They said no. Jimmy Garoppolo, though, he strikes me as a little dumb. Like, he just walks around with a smile on his face. Hey, they drafted Trey Lance. Yeah, so what? I hope to be the quarterback. Same thing with Aaron Rodgers as well. So I think that that's something that
well,
you
John
just see
Lynch
from
admitted it too that they yep. they called on the Packers and the Packers shut them down. They also the Niners also admitted that they went after Matt Stafford too, and there was a whole conversation back and forth there. I guess he knows someone in Detroit, and they were going back. And Shanahan talked about how stressed he was because he wanted to make sure he got in on it, and he really liked Stafford. And then he found out that he wasn't going to get him, and then he also found out he was going to be in his division, and that it was driving him nuts. I forget if it was at the combine or something like that, but. Yeah, I mean, look, the Niners made no secret of the fact that they were out trying to get somebody else.
You know what's weird about that, though, is like they make no secret about that, but then it's like Camp Knox whenever they're talking about a week one starter. Like, it's just kind of talking out of both sides of their mouth. I guess so. Like, yeah, I don't want the other team getting a leg up on prepping this week, but we'll talk about who we're trading for, who we're kicking the tires on.
And I know that it's the human element that everybody says they don't care. It's easier if you're Jimmy G or you're sympathizing with Jimmy G to go, yeah, you know what? No matter where I play, my money's guaranteed, and I'm gonna be worth over $100 million when all is said and done. So do whatever you want. But the human element is like, hey, yeah, maybe whether he's willing to admit he played like garbage in the Super Bowl or not, I played quarterback for a Super Bowl caliber team when we're healthy. I want a chance to run this thing back and do it again, and they might pull the rug out from under me without me having to say so, and that would suck.
J.J. Watt might have ended the Minnesota Vikings season. Dalvin Cook is going to he's remained out of practice. He's questionable for this week. But if they fall to 0-3, good luck. Dalvin Cook, man, he's always banged up. I think it's what did you call it earlier? The
feline syndrome?
Yeah, I think Dalvin Cook's got a little bit of that. I've seen it firsthand from time to time. Alex Guerrero, longtime trainer of Tom Brady. He said that Bill Belichick treated Tom Brady like a 20-year-old kid, not a 40-year-old man. I heard Tom Brady's dad kind of on the air talking about saying the same type of thing, that Belichick kind of treated Brady without the respect that he deserved to be treated with. And you see it now because, I mean, he's been in Tampa Bay for a little bit now. But a little surprising that Bill Belichick – I guess it's not surprising. It's Bill Belichick, for crying out loud – that wouldn't give Brady kind of the freedom that he would expect for having the greatest football resume of all time.
You know what? Saban, Belichick, Popovich, they're not perfect. Just because they're successful doesn't mean they don't have their quirks too. Doesn't mean they can't be egomaniacs. Doesn't mean that they can't, you know, have a certain way that they want things done. And they're going to face players with different personalities. Most buy in. And as we said, when you're talking about culture, winning changes a whole lot of minds and opinions. But there are going to be some independently strong-minded people that come in and just aren't having it, aren't doing it. The beauty is, when you're as successful as they are, if you don't buy in, you're sent out, and they'll find somebody else, which is why the Patriots have been so great about picking up veterans later in their career to do whatever's necessary to win and put all the other stuff aside. It's just like kind of like we talked about in Green Bay, or kind of like I told you in my experiences dealing with the Rockets. You treat your superstar players differently, and if you don't, you're an idiot.
Yeah, you see that from time to time. We see it all the time in sports. Remember when we were talking about Gronk yesterday? He was on Manning Cast, and yep. He was talking about how he never watches film. He walked that one back. Here's what Gronk had to say.
Yeah, you know, I actually watch tons of film. You know, an overload of film. I was just, you know, I would probably blame Nelson over there. He asked me 8 times to go on the show. I told him it's not a good idea to put me on the show with the Paytons, with the Mannings. You know, they always get me joking around. You know, they always get me in that type of silly atmosphere, and that's what happened. But, you know, Coach threatened me now that I don't get my vet day anymore because I don't watch film. So, trust me, I watch so much film that, you know, my girlfriend gets mad at me. She freaking throws it at me sometimes because I'm watching so much film.
First of all, shout out to my man Nelson Louise, who he's referring to. He is the head of communications for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He was our PR director for years with the Rockets.
Oh, wow.
And he's a good friend of mine. And so that's great. He got the shout out, even if it's in a bad light. You know, they put Tom and Jerry on film, too, if you need it. And you can watch it on your computer. So I'm sure that Gronk watches a lot of film. But it's trying to figure out why in the hell Tom and Jerry can't get along and you know, who's going to catch who.
Okay. Yeah, but
he looks like more of a guy. He's watching cartoons. He ain't watching a whole lot of film.
You could just hear the oh yeah, a ton of film, overload of film. My girlfriend hates how much film that I watch. I want my vet day. Basically,
is the hub film?
Gronk was saying.
Do they consider the hub film?
He's got a girlfriend. I don't know why you would say that. All right, coming up next,
here
biggest concerns and how the Texans could pull the upset tonight. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, I want to tell you about Dr. O and his staff at Apollo Men's Health. Dr. O is a friend. He is a trusted guy that I go to because of the fact that he knows what he's doing. He has changed me. He can change you, too. He can get you in a way more healthy state of mind just by going to Apollo Men's Health. They have two locations to better serve you near downtown Houston. But the fact is, for men and women, if you feel like you just don't have that energy you once had, from the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, you're having issues and problems where you always were stellar, you can get back there again. All you got to do is get to Apollo Men's Health. They'll put you on a program, and if you tell them exactly what you're trying to do and answer their questions honestly, they'll get you results and have you feeling like you never thought you could feel like again. They are fantastic. Go to ApolloMH.com right now. Sign up for your first appointment. When you do, you're going to find out most major insurance is accepted, discounts for military personnel and first responders. And then start, when you get to that first appointment, being prepared to answer their questions honestly. If you answer their tough questions honestly, they're going to get you results by putting you on a program that does exactly what you want to do. You want to lose weight. You want to get stronger. You want to recover quicker. You want to have more energy. They're going to take care of all those things. Just tell them what you want to do. Full body composition analysis only takes minutes, but it gives you results across the board, and it allows you to chart those results as you show improvement from week to week. If you want to get quick energy without going the hormone therapy route, which is available for men and women with many different options of the way you can administer it, just go to a B12 shot. I have one every week. The B12 shot gives me more energy. I feel better about myself, and I think it works. You can find out the same way because you get your first B12 shot free if you just mention my name, Joel Blank, when you show up there. It's a fantastic organization of people that are experts at what they do, but they're people. They're not going to try and sell something that doesn't work, push it on you and say you got to have this when you really don't. That's why Dr. O started his own clinic. He weeds out what didn't work and just is there to be a cash cow. He gets to all the things that focus on getting you results. I love these people. I believe in these people. That's why I speak for these people. Check them out today. It's the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
ESPN 97.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Joel's firing me up during the break. The Tennessee Titans / Oilers, what they're known on Twitter this week, because it's Oiler Appreciation Week in Tennessee. They sent out I guess they got this quote from a former Oiler. They said, here in Houston, the Oilers, we're here for the forgotten ones. We kind of feel like outcasts here. We're not tied to the team here, even though this is where we were the foundation. Look, I understand why
this is the same reason you bet on Europe.
Because you're not, really it's not the same reason.
You're fake loyalty. You're not an American because you're betting against
them
in the
Ryder
Cup.
My loyalty's to the bottom
line. You're not a true Houstonian because you think it's okay for the Titans to have the Derek logo and the Love You Blue and all the things that you are sitting there saying that it's okay. The Tennessee Titans are stirring it up on Twitter, pissing off everybody in Houston.
Yeah, they're doing
a good job. You think it's great.
I don't think that's great. See, this is what I do with 3 hours, BK. I just let him cut me off, and I can't finish
the thought.
I did with a
guy that wears lipstick in promo shoots.
I wasn't wearing lipstick. Good chance it was chapstick, though. here's my problem with this. Like, the Oilers and the Titans, they're trolling Houston, obviously. It's a division rival. It's all good fun. I get it. And I get why the city's upset with that. Totally understand. I would be, too, if I were a Texans fan. Here's the problem that I have, though, with the McNair family.
So you're not a Texans fan. You just admitted it. I mean, if you were.
I would like the Texans to win, but I'll never be a Texan fan as much as I was an Oiler fan. I'm willing to admit that. They're my favorite NFL team, but
sure they are.
I'm kind of a casual NFL team. I just love the NFL. Do I want the Texans to win? Yeah, sure. I think it'd be better for us than what we do for 3 hours. Here's the problem I have with the McNair family. Like, you don't need the Columbia blue and the Oiler blue and the Love You blue to bring Earl Campbell down to midfield at NRG Stadium and give him a round of applause or put his number on the rafters. This is on the McNairs and the fact that they ignore that the Oilers were here. They ignore the football history in the city of Houston. That's where my problem is at. Yeah, are the Tennessee Titans trolling the city of Houston? Yes. Does that suck? Yes. That's a bad look on Tennessee.
The league never should have allowed it to happen.
But they own it. It's a bad look on the McNairs that they don't bring Earl Campbell. Why hasn't Warren Moon ever been at midfield at NRG Stadium?
You don't know that he hasn't. He's been the team captain before.
No, they don't do it enough. They ignore the Oilers because they want to act like the Oilers never existed, because this city loves the Oilers a lot. And probably likes them to an extent more than that they ever loved the Texans. It's a problem
BK
with the Bears.
BK, what's your
honor
opinion
and
on?
Respect the Oiler and the football history in this city.
I'm going to turn off my mic and just eat some popcorn. This is great. Y'all don't need me. You'll never need me.
What's coming up 3-7?
What's coming up 3-7? A lot of Texans talk. Your favorite team, JB. Texans Panthers preview. What
JB
the Texans,
2, by the way.
JB 2. Is that what we're going with?
Yeah.
You're JB 1?
One. Yeah.
Not a first is the worst, second is the best type of situation.
No chance.
Okay, you're the OG, JB. I love it. Yeah, a lot of Texans-Panthers preview, of course. We'll talk some Stros baseball. Nice win last night. Some ridiculous names for the Angels pitchers. We'll get into that. I believe Willie B. Hardigan is pitching for the Halos tonight with Buster Cherry coming out of the bullpen.
What a bunch of
so
junk.
We'll talk about that. And yeah,
oh, he pitched
be a good
the
show.
Other night.
He did. Nicely yeah. done. Jansen Junk, which... probably unfortunate for that guy growing up.
First names were a little awkward, too, on some of the pitches.
Yeah, Packy?
Packy is a first name?
Mm-hmm.
I was watching the broadcast. I think Callis said it was the third Packy to ever pitch in Major League Baseball history.
I did hear that.
Yeah, he did.
The other two guys
work.
Pitched in like the 30s and the 40s, though.
Yeah, like old Tom Murphy.
That's the name of the mascot for a minor league baseball team called the Pack Rats or something like that. There's Packy bringing out the first pitch.
Is that right? Just, that could be a real thing.
I mean, it just sounds like it'd be more fitting than the name of a Major League Baseball pitcher.
Agreed.
You going to talk about the logo for the Titans?
Oh, like the Packy logo? I don't know what you're talking about with the minor league baseball team there. No, probably not.
I just think that here's the thing. From an organizational standpoint, from the Texans, you know it's written into the agreement that allowed them to have a football team again, that the Oilers name, logo, colors, uniforms, the Adams family decided that they had to have and take with them to Tennessee. It wasn't that the city of Houston did this and turned their backs.
Right.
It wasn't that the McNair family did it. It was done by Bud Adams and his family, and that's what really sucks more.
Yeah, it's just a tough situation, right? I mean, it's one of the worst moments, if not the worst moment in Houston sports history. So it's like there are always going to be people who feel like showing them any sort of love is like tipping the cap to Bud Adams and like not being mad about what he did. So I tend to agree with you guys. Like, I would prefer them show some love to the Houston football history, even though it's not technically the same franchise. But I understand why people are on the other side of the equation, because it was just a heartbreaking time for so many people around here.
Any chance the Texans win tonight?
No.
Mm-mm. You have any plays in it?
I will have some plays. I got in on the Panthers earlier this week, and it was 7.5.
Yeah, I did too.
Lines up to 9, I think, right now. Wouldn't be surprised if it gets to 9.5 before kickoff tonight.
Total still at 43?
I think so. There's a prop that I find interesting. Now, the odds aren't great over at MyBookie.
Yeah, MyBookie.ag.
I know you're a big fan of them.
Yeah, big time.
Farrell Brown, over under 1.5 catches. I feel like for the Texans to do anything tonight, the tight ends are going to have to be productive. I think we'll see a lot of 12 personnel to try to create holes
for
the ground
game. Plus, aside
from
wheel routes, the biggest bailout for a quarterback is his tight end.
Dead on. So that's a prop that I really like. I don't see.
One
I can't figure out
catches.
Why it's so low.
What's total yards for Davis Mills?
Over 122. Under? Oh, I don't know what it is off the top of my head. That's just my guess.
I thought you were actually quoting that, because I'd be like, I'd go over on that, but not by much.
No, that was my guess.
I think it's 220.
What?
They're just anticipating
heading
the
there now.
They're anticipating the Texans are going to be down and throwing the football.
MyBookie.ag, player props for tonight's game. I didn't look at the player props yet.
We'll get into that.
That's quite interesting. 1.5's kind of appeasing, too. Like, I don't see him completing many passes. Like, I think it's going to be in the teens, how many passes that he completes. Like, somewhere between 16, 17 passes. Like, he's going to throw, like, 38.
Right.
But he's going to complete, like, 40%
of them.
The
biggest mismatches we talked about all week is the fact that young, athletic defense that's finally the scheme is finally set in for them, and they're grasping it. It's going to be a massive problem for any quarterback, especially a rookie quarterback, on a short week that really didn't really expect to be starting after halftime last week. That's the biggest thing that you're going to see where they capitalize all night long.
I want to ask y'all something. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. Could y'all see the way the Panthers rebuilt, where they didn't draft the quarterback, they took the reclamation project and Sam Darnold, and they drafted so much defense, right? The first team in NFL history to spend every single draft pick on defense. Would y'all want the Texans to maybe do that? Like, use all of their assets plus whatever they get in the Deshaun Watson trade to draft everything else but quarterback and try for one of these reclamation guys that's out there?
Well, we said all along, they're not in a position right now where they got to have a franchise quarterback this year. So Jeremy was quick to say this, and I agreed with him, in the fact that every single time you're drafting the best player available, and it doesn't matter what position they play because you have so many holes to fill, you have a deep roster to rebuild, and you need so much help that basically you only address the quarterback when it becomes necessary. Free agency a year from now might bring some different candidates. Trades, because we saw what happened with Aaron Rodgers and Deshaun Watson. Teams from year to year have falling outs. Quarterback should not be your main focus right now. A roster that's that can compete week in, week out should.
Your team, like the quarterback position, it's a dependent variable, right? Like, you have to have so many other things for you to be good at the position. You need a good offensive line to protect you. You'd like to have a good running back to run the ball, take some pressure off of you. You need receivers to catch the football as well. I love the philosophy, if you're rebuilding a team, to build it around the quarterback position. And when the time is right, you go trade for a quarterback, or maybe even draft a quarterback earlier. You know, you put together a package like for Deshaun Watson or for Justin Fields. Like, I would have never done what the Bears did and you know, brought in Justin Fields whenever I have an offensive line that's in shambles. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me, because now they can't even play him because the offensive line's in shambles.
And there's a 30 for 30 to be made about that, because it already happened in Houston, Texas with David Carr. I mean, that's exactly what could happen. You could be the greatest prospect coming out, and it could be a good draft class for quarterbacks. But if you put them in a bad situation, the results could be doomsday.
Yeah, I heard y'all talking about the Panther ceiling, right? You were 9 wins, I think, Joel, Jeremy. You were maybe closer to
10
this year. It's like, if that works, if the Panthers are a good football team this year and next, maybe more teams follow that blueprint.
But I also think the biggest takeaway, like we said, even from a Texans perspective, that sometimes gets overlooked is the coaching staff. It's a huge upgrade this year in Houston in the way that they've gotten the coaching staff constructed, regardless of what you think of the head coach. Matt Rhule has done a hell of a job by going, I am the CEO. I have the right coordinators. They have the right position coaches. That's going to make my team better no matter what else happens. And that's key.
Yeah. All right, BK, we'll be listening 3-7, the Wheelhouse coming up. It's going to do it for us. Again, reminder, we'll be at Texas Barber College tomorrow, home of the $5 haircut, 8201 South Gester. Come by, say hello. Booker T will be hanging out there for a little bit as well. The five-time world champion. Thanks to Dell for doing all the hard work. He's Joel. I'm Jeremy. The Wheelhouse is next. Talk to you tomorrow, Houston.
Answer that.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.